Jim Taylor back on the WRMJ Sportsline on this Saturday morning. What an honor and a treat this morning. We're going to get back in the WRMJ Wayback Machine and go back to 1979. We welcome the man who brought radio to Alito, Illinois. His name is Roger Coleman. Welcome back to the WRMJ studios. And we should first say thank you for bringing radio to Alito, Illinois. Good to see you this morning.
Well, this is a red letter day for me, and I appreciate the invitation and being with you and to be in the original place where it all started.
And one of your original employees is right by your side, John Hoshite.
Yeah.
So a little bit about...
Well, a good owner, by the way.
Amen.
And a good citizen of Alito.
Yeah, well, and the first story I guess I can tell, or we need to tell the listening audience... You know, you've been involved in radio for so much of your life, right? But I think when you were telling the story to one of my coworkers out here today, Kyle McEwen, the footprint of this station, I think, probably means a little bit more, because when you look at the call letters of the station, right? I mean, they have some big meaning in your life, right? So I think WRMJ may be greater than the other radio. No, I'm just kidding. The other radio stations. But for those listeners that don't know... Tell them the story about at least the call letter origination.
Well, obviously my name is Roger, and my wife's name is Marilyn, and we had two children, Jeff and Julie. So we really didn't start out to do that, but we were trying to pick call letters that we thought were, you know, nice and John's kept them.
Right, yeah, no.
But there's also a J in there for John.
Yeah, there you go. I hadn't thought of that, but no, because I think you told me you tried to get like W-A-A-L-E or W-M-C-O from Mercer County and things like that, but they were taken by barge traffic or whatever. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So let's start with, why did you think Alito needed radio?
Well, the Federal Communications Commission put an allocation for Alito. They do that periodically. This was back when there weren't as many radio stations as there are today. And how they picked that, I don't know. To digress for a minute, for instance, when I was in Galesburg, we put on a station called WAAG. And the license was actually allocated to a town in Iowa along the Mississippi River. And we decided we wanted a power FM, so we petitioned the FM to move the allocation from Iowa to Galesburg, Illinois, which they did, and we applied for it when I was with that station. So there's a lot of things you can do, but... I think any more that the allocations for broadcast is long over.
So when you thought about coming to Alito and bringing a radio station to Alito, I know you do some like surveys, things of that nature, contact businesses, get their thoughts on it. And John was telling me this, that there was some initial, there was some initial resistance to saying, Coleman, you're crazy. Radio ain't going to work in Alito. So tell us some of those stories.
Well,
and you can name names on the people who said radio would work in Alito. No, I'm just kidding.
Frankly, I've forgotten all their names.
I can tell the one story, but you go ahead.
But my family originated from here also. We moved to Galesburg from Millersburg when I was a little kid. I hardly remember Millersburg. And we had a lot of relatives that were here who are now deceased. And at that time I had the Monmouth station, and I decided, well, it'd be nice to have another one close by. And I applied for it, and nobody else did. And then I found John Hoshite.
Yeah.
So you apply when you... For our listening audience, you apply through the FCC for the license to broadcast in
Right.
Alito. But I mean, there was some, I don't know if you call it resistance, but there were some people that probably said, hey, Coleman, this is a crazy idea. Radio probably ain't going to work in Alito. Did you got some of that, right?
I did. And I think John could name names, but there was one fellow that it was just all over me about why I'm coming here, and I couldn't really get his reasoning for why you wouldn't want a radio station in a town. Unless, and the newspaper, to the best of my knowledge, and I got along well with I've forgotten the guy's name that was running it, but we became good friends.
Paul Behan? Was that? Yeah, right, yeah.
And we'd play golf together, there was no real dislike, and, you know, I mean, he was trying to run his business, and we were trying to run ours.
So,
yeah. Well,
so segue, John. You were here at the ground floor.
Yeah, well, another thing that a lot of people don't know is that Roger and his wife Marilyn, you applied for the license, but you also had to prove to the FCC that there was a need for a radio station. You had to do a community assessment, and I've still got your community assessment in our public file out here. And 37 years later, it's the same needs that you and Marilyn found from interviewing people are still needs that we have today. You know, still it's just amazing, just to a T, the criticisms, the needs, and so on. So I've got that thing that he turned into the FCC to show, see, here they need a radio station. But to digress to that story is the gentleman that was, and I know I can say this, and unfortunately he's deceased, but the gentleman that was giving Roger so much grief was Chuck Fetterman, who was the manager of the country company's insurance agents back then. And after we'd been on the air a couple years, maybe three, he called me into his office one day, and he said, John, he said, I want you to know when Roger talked about putting a station in here, I told him he was nuts and da-da-da-da-da and da-da-da-da-da, and I thought it was the stupidest thing I ever heard of. And he says, I want to admit I was wrong. He says, you've been a great addition to the community, and it's worked out super, and I just wanted to, I'm man enough to tell you when I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and I was wrong about you guys and Roger and the station. And then to make it even, then when I ended up buying the station from Roger, Chuck was one of my investors. So he actually put money behind the deal. So.
Well, it seems to me, and this is out of memory, you had 12 or 13 people.
Right.
I remember you and I can't remember the other person came to me in Monmouth and said, we'd like to buy the station.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of a little shocked and, you know, but anyway, It was a win-win situation for everybody.
Right, yeah.
Well, so take us back to 1979, if you remember, you know, the days leading up to flipping the switch in WRMJ's first broadcast day. You said June 11th, right?
Right,
1979. Yeah. So putting a station on the air, you know, I guess, what was that like in that era? Staffing it, trying to get the equipment, the tower, all that type of stuff. Because the original tower still has always been there.
Yeah.
Well, I was trying to think of that farmer's name.
Bill Longley.
Bill Longley. And I remember he was a very nice guy, and he had this big field that was a big pasture. And anyway, he agreed, and we had a nice deal. Well, then every once in a while is what would happen. And somebody from the radio station would go out, open the gate to go in and work on the transmitter, and out go his cows. And that upset
him.
Yeah. No, Bill, I never ran into Admiral Longley upset too often, but one day he called up and he said, John, somebody didn't shut the gate, and my $1,100 steer just got hit on the highway. He was not a happy camper when that happened.
Well, I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. No, there are some things I didn't tell you, Roger.
So again, well, you know, flip it on the before I ask you that, coming back today, all right, and being back here on what is today, the 29th of April of 2017, right? So you go back to June 11th of 1979. You know, what does it kind of mean coming back and seeing the station still running? And, you know, I tell a lot of people that that we're at a point in the station that it's not about really the people that are on the air, although we all, you know, in this business think we're really good, myself included, and what John's been able to accomplish. But I say WRMJ is more of a brand now. People know what it is by what the product we provide. So what does it mean to you when you come back on a day like today and see what the station is now?
Well, I guess the good news is it's still here, and there's good people running it, and that's part of it. I mean, a good share of it. I mean, it's the people that are here, and they're residents of Aledo. They know the town. They know the problems. They know the, you know, and it's a way to your athletic teams. I mean, you know, I can remember I had an old maid aunt in Galesburg, and she couldn't go to any of the basketball games, but boy, she could sure listen on the radio, and that was a big deal to her because, and there are a lot of people, especially older people, that maybe they graduated from Aledo High School, and they still want to follow it.
You know, did you have any reservations initially to do radio here? That once you started down the path of saying, I'm bringing radio to Aledo, there's some a little bit of resistance. Maybe this won't work. Maybe this isn't a good idea.
Well, I say that I've always I'm trying to think how to say this, but I'm somebody that'll go ahead and try something. Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid to fail. And I'm sure I've had some failures in my life, but I've also had some great successes, and this is one of them.
So,
I mean, I can't take the whole thing. Yeah. You got John and people like you that are here.
Yeah.
I know there's stations in small towns that have collapsed because they didn't know how to do it.
So, when you turned the board on for the first time, you know, can you take us back what that was like?
It was a disaster. It was a Roger says first day.
What time of day was it?
Before we had the automation and stuff, we went on at 6 a.m.
So that broadcast day was 6 a.m.
Yeah, we'd play the national anthem and start the day at 6 a.m. and we'd sign off at 11 o'clock at night, Monday through Saturday, I think, and we'd sign off at 10 o'clock on Sundays. And so Dave Hutchins, our morning guy, I mean, he'd have to come in every morning and turn the transmitter on and get us going. Well, that first morning, some wires were screwed up in the turntables or something, and we were trying to play the music, and it sounded like a Nickelodeon machine, and oh, gosh, it was terrible. And then so we finally figured that out, and we got that. You know, the engineer was still here in town because he was wiring things up right to the last minute. So we got that straightened out. And then for the first day, we just played music and let people kind of know we were on the air. And then the second day is when the commercials first started airing. And what's ironic is, Roger, I think I told you, we had a lightning strike a week ago Tuesday, which we're still not 100% recovered from. But we got hit a lot in those early days with lightning, didn't we? Man, it was terrible.
Do you remember, I'm curious, do you remember who the first commercial was that played? And I'm so mad we don't have like an archive of that.
We do. I have the log.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do we have the audio transcript?
No, we didn't. No, we didn't record anything. But yeah, no, there are some businesses that were on with us day one that are still on today.
So when you initially went to start selling the station in terms of picking up the advertisers, what was that like? Do you remember much about that?
Well, obviously you were trying to educate them on what you could do for them.
Yeah.
Some of them, however, had been on Quad City Radio, and frankly, we were a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
But, of course, Quad City Radio and you know, would have a larger audience because, you know, of the Quad Cities and the surrounding area, where we had to start from scratch, and primarily you would start from here in Aledo and go from there.
Well, and I think the other thing you told the story to me, and I didn't realize that, you know, and I remember growing up in the Quad Cities, you know, AM radio was such a big thing in the '60s and into the '70s, and then you know, in the 80s, FM radio start to get its push. And if I remember correctly, what was it I guess the main competition for WRMJ in the early days, was it WHBF
right.
radio?
1270 AM.
Plus.
Yeah.
They cover.
They were the hometown station.
Well, because somebody showed me, and I can't remember where I saw this at, somebody showed me, and I saw a newspaper, and I don't know if it's a Times Record, but it was an advertised clipping of WHBF radio, and it was talking about their election coverage, saying we'll be covering the key races in Rock Island and Mercer County. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, they did that, and my, how that has changed. And you said, I think you told me the big story, one of the big turning points here was telling one of the local car dealerships, hey, stop putting just AM radios in cars. You need FM radios in cars. So take it away, a little bit about that story.
Right. Well, you know, as FM was just starting to get popular, and two things. Number one, Gene Cooper. Roger and I talked to Gene Cooper, and we got him to start buying these FM little radios.
FM tuner?
The FM tuners that you could put on underneath your dashboard.
Yeah.
And we wanted him to sell those to farmers in their pickup trucks so they could hear the markets and our farm stuff. And then I went next door to Gloria and Larry Morgan at Harney Morgan Chevrolet, and I just kind of pleaded with them. Because back then, when they would order a car, it didn't come AM, FM. The standard issue was just AM. And I'd say, please, trust me, it's coming. You'll do your car buyers a favor. When you order a car, please have them order AM and FM so they can hear us. And I said, FM radio is coming on strong, and this way they'll have FM in their car. So we got Gene he sold these FM translators for, you know, at cost. And then I got Larry and Gloria to start ordering cars that had FM radios in them so that they could hear us. Yeah.
So people don't realize when we first signed on, there was you owned the Monmouth.
Right.
WRAM. So that was basically, it was kind of a sister station arrangement. Was there like simulcasting or things of that nature when we first signed on?
Yes, and it didn't work out well.
People are kind of territorial.
Yes. It took a while.
Now, were there some, you know, internally here, were there like people telling you, we need to get away from that relationship with them, or were you involved in those discussions, or John?
After a while, you know, a while, once Alito finally established themselves,
So how would the simulcasting work? Would it be just certain segments of the day, or would it be?
Well, you had to sign off at sunset, right? Ram had to sign off at sunset.
But for example, was so it was the same newscaster? There was a WRMJ newscast and a WRAM.
Yeah. What we did is we were separate until 12:30 approximately, and then we joined together for the noon farm show because Neil Anderson was our farm director. Remember Neil?
Oh, yes.
And so Neil, he'd do the farm show for both stations. And then at 1 o'clock.
No, it's not the Neil Anderson that's the state senator representing.
He was a farmer from Warren County. And so he was a good broadcaster, and he'd do the farm show. And then. So we would come together at 12:30 for the noon farm show, and then Neil do the farm show, and then we, because they'd have to sign off, especially in the winter months, you'd have to sign off at 4:45 or 5 o'clock or something like that. I had a disc jockey here that was the disc jockey for both the AM in Monmouth and the FM here in Alito. So he would program for both. We'd do the programming for both stations.
So when did the separation?
When we bought it.
That was what year?
84.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you look at putting the programming together here, I mean, did you know coming in, hey, country music, ag, local news, local sports, community type of stuff? That's basically what you wanted to do when you applied for the license. That was the boilerplate for this thing?
Yes.
And
a lot of people think FM stands for free music.
But it doesn't.
I asked Roger too. I said, why? And when we first started, we had a little mishmash of everything. We kind of got the leftover records Yeah, as you can see behind us. And so we were playing a little bit of everything, mostly country, but you could probably hear Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra would come in. And then we just really just went to country, but because as Roger said, we figured that was the music format that would at least offend people the most, I guess.
Well, and I was not the wealthiest guy in
exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I had to watch things pretty closely because I had just bought one station and I was still paying on that, and then along comes this station and.
Yeah, we weren't cutting a fat hog.
No. So, and I guess I wasn't driving Cadillacs or BMWs.
So I guess we should back up for those people that don't know. I mean, you have a pretty storied career in radio that goes well beyond Alito. So, you know, WGIL in Galesburg, right? WAAG in Galesburg, WRAM in Monmouth, and then I know... WGEN in Geneseo. So have I covered all of them or not?
Oh, no. I had stations in Morris, Effingham, Geneseo. I think by the time I hung it up, I had about 17 or 18 stations.
Right.
All right,
we're talking.
As a little kid, I was a big radio buff. I listened to the radio in my room from morning till night.
And that's why you wanted to get into the business.
Then. Right.
So yeah. Your first station was where then?
Well, the first station that I really worked at was WGIL. The one thing I did there, I remember when I was, I eventually became the manager. And about that time, FM was just starting to come into being. And I was able to get a frequency, and that was WAAG. And I remember I worked for an attorney in Galesburg. I won't say his name. And I said, you know, someday this is going to be a valuable station. And he looked at me like, what are you smoking? And anyway, today I'm good friends with all the people down there. The Pritchard family owns it now, which has been in that thing. And this is by far their top billing facility is WAAG.
Yeah.
And it has great coverage. And I had a good engineer by the name of Jim Thompson, and I want to credit him. We moved that frequency from Iowa all the way over to Galesburg, and then we applied for it. We were scared to death that somebody else would come in, and they would have gotten it over us because we already had a station there. But in those days, FM was non-existent. The only cars that had FM were the luxury cars, the Lincolns and the Cadillacs. They came in automatically, but the rest of them didn't come in until...
And you said you weren't driving those either.
No.
Hey, we need to take a break talking with Roger Coleman. He brought a radio to Alito back in 1979. We'll continue our conversation right after this on WMJ and WMJ.com.